This is URN.
Hello and welcome back to Over the Trent. We haven't been in your podcast for quite some time. Myself and Kieran have been very busy. However, Nottingham Forest have been busy on the pitch, starting to play well, and it's getting a little bit exciting, all things Trent side. Kieran Etheridge joins me all the way down from Brighton. Kieran, how are you, my friend?
Yeah, I'm good. It's been a busy few months, hasn't it, over Christmas. And I'm glad to be getting back on podcast and radio, to be honest.
Yeah, should be good. Varsity coming up for URN and NSTV, all things that are very exciting. We're going to start with Nottingham Forest 1, Chelsea 1. Now, Kieran has not been able to go to as many games as possible due to his loyalty to McDonald's, the brand. you weren't there. I was alone on New Year's Day, slightly hungover, very tired, watching Forest play a good game. Kieran, did you get to watch the highlights for this game?
I did. It looked like a very, very good game out of everyone, Serge Aurier getting the goal.
Yes.
I was working New Year's Day, and I remember my manager was giving me score updates throughout the day, and he was just like, Serge Aurier scored, and everyone was just like, what? Because he's not really a prolific goal scorer like that. But no, very, very good result. The Chelsea side is there to be beaten at the moment. And Forest definitely could have got the win. I think it was fair to say there were chances. But a point at home against Chelsea is always going to be taken at the end of the day, especially back then, obviously struggling towards the bottom of the table before the little resurgence to the mid-table that we'll come on to. So yeah, point against Chelsea, not really going to scoff at that at all, are we?
No, definitely not. And it very much felt like Forest were the only team that could have won that in the second half. Forest were really playing some good, attractive football. Morgan Gibbs-White, who we will talk about. But let's talk a little bit about Serge Aurier, who's been an absolute steal for Forest this year, much maligned at Tottenham Hotspur. And I think he's just found his level. I think he's found his coaching, sort of what he wants, really. I think Cooper's just covers everyone with kindness and just makes them feel valued. I think we're seeing a real sort of resurgence for Serge Aurier. How important is it to have such a strong fullback at the moment for Forest, who were in and probably still are in a relegation battle, Kieran?
Well, he's easily Forest's most experienced fullback by like a long shot. Maybe Renan Lodi's up there as well, but Lodi hasn't really been able to replicate his form that you would have hoped he would have been able to. He has got better. But yep. I remember us being very, very harsh on him at one point. But I think Aurier is probably the most important fullback that Forest have at the moment. Obviously, he's done it at Spurs. He did it at PSG. So you would hope that he would be able to kind of bring some of that experience onto the pitch, that kind of Champions League experience as well, and inject that into the defence. And he has. And he's also brought goal scoring as well, which is something that none of us would have really expected. But he's a very important piece to the kind of Forest puzzle. Really covers that kind of that right side very well as well, because Brennan Johnson isn't the most defensive winger in the world. I think it's fair to say he doesn't track back as much as perhaps he could. But Aurier does cover him very well as getting up the pitch.
Serge has actually scored and put in some really good balls into the box. He's made an amazing run against Leicester, and he just sort of weaved through their defence. I think one thing that I would like to say is, how good was that finish from Serge Aurier? So composed, such a great strike of the ball. And that pretty much wraps up Chelsea 1-1. And you think, right, okay, not a bad result. Here comes the six-pointer. We're rubbish away from home. You think Southampton are rubbish at home, and Forest get their second away goal of the year and only the first away win of the year, beating Southampton 1-0. Really good performance from the boys. Southampton looked awful. However, that, for the first time since August, pushed Forest out of the relegation zone. How important is it just to get out of that zone, Kieran, and not get sort of bogged down in being 18th to 20th, which we had been for so long?
Yeah, it's really important for the kind of confidence levels of the team. Being stuck in a relegation fight is really, really draining on the players mentally, as well as physically. Obviously, you've got to be on top form pretty much every game, and you're going into games knowing that the team that you're facing is better than you in games, which could be quite disheartening, to be honest. You've got to really kind of have belief in yourself to get out of that kind of slump that Forest did find themselves in, and credit to them. They stuck to it, and Taiwo Awoniyi picked up the goal here. He's been solid. I think he's definitely been worth the money that Forest splashed out for him. I'd say he's come up with some very important goals so far this season, and he's kind of that poacher that none of the other forwards, because none of the other forwards are really out and out strikers, I would say. All of them are either wingers or attacking midfielders that play in that kind of false nine role when they play up front. Whereas Awoniyi is really a poacher, and that's really important, especially in a relegation fight, picking up those vital goals. Because if he didn't pick up that goal, it could have been a complete different story here, to be honest. Southampton could have easily gone on, got one, because it changes the game completely. Or it could have ended in a draw, which isn't ideal against a fellow relegation candidate as such at the point.
Yeah, and Taiwo is currently injured and he's growing as a player. Your point about his worth the money, I'd like to just see him develop for 2-3 more years before I say he's completely worth the money. But I do get your point. He has scored lots of crucial goals, memorably West Ham, Liverpool, and now Southampton. It was a really good win and the first little bit of reward for travelling fans in a long, long time. Really good points for Forest, and that pushed us outside of the relegation zone. And you think, right, here we go, on to the FA Cup. Blackpool really struggling in the Championship. Lose 4-1.
It's just the FA Cup for you, to be honest, as well. The FA Cup really is one of those competitions that you can take a struggling team and they can cause an upset anywhere. I mean, this isn't the biggest upset that happened, I would say, during the FA Cup this season by any means.
No.
But it's not ideal, I think it's fair to say.
It got hidden by the Stevenage result. However, the one that I found very disappointing was that Forest flew from East Midlands Airport to Blackpool Airport, a 35-minute flight.
Yeah.
Just come on, lads. We're better than that. We've got an environmental partner now. One of the good things from that was a Gustavo Scrappa appearance, who made his second appearance for the Reds after his debut against Southampton. He's been very good. He's looking really spicy, someone who can create a lot in the midfield, something I think we lacked quite a lot. The only thing I'd say about him is I don't like how easy he goes down. I think it's very sort of, dare I say, without sounding very 1990s, he's very continental in the fact he'll go down looking for the foul and won't get up and try and get the ball back. When Forest are playing the way they are and how desperate we are at times, we can't afford someone to be gesticulating with their hands up. However, I'm sure he will get goals for Forest. But Blackpool, I think we can write it off 10 changes or something mad. And it's just a bad result.
One thing that really surprised me about Scarborough, actually, he's 29. Like, I thought he was much younger than that when he came in. I thought he was like 24, 20, 23, somewhere around there. He's 29 years old, which surprised me a little bit. But he looks like quite a good pickup. Brings something different in that attacking midfield. Brings in some competition for Morgan Gibbs-White as well, because they play a very similar kind of role. So he was really the shining light in quite a dire team that day. Harry Toffolo didn't have a great game either, I want to say. None of the defence really did. But Scarpa, it was a promising debut, and hopefully he can kind of replicate that in the Premier League. But yeah, going down that easily, South American players always look for fouls. That's just part of their game. And because their mentality is win by any means necessary. That is their way of playing the game. So I don't know whether he's ever going to outgrow that as such, but he can perhaps grow more and become more clever about how he does it. If he goes down, realizes he's not going to get the foul, get up a bit quicker, start chasing the ball again. That just comes with experience in the league, I suppose.
Then we'll move on to the quarterfinals. One of the best days for Forest in a long time in the League Cup, something we've won quite a few times. A 1-1 draw against Wolves saw us go to a penalty shootout. And then came the 1-1 draw against Wolverhampton Wanderers with a famous penalty shootout. The League Cup is something we've always sort of muddled out of anonymously, really, so many times growing up. I remember we had a chance to get to our first quarterfinals a few years ago and lost to Burton Albion, who then got thumped 9-0 by Man City. So I wasn't too upset about that in the long run. But this, for the first time in a long time, feels like we're taking our chances in FA Cup games and League Cup games. The game was really interesting. Forest were on the ascendancy for most of it. Then came the second half and, well, Wolves just absolutely dominated us and we were sort of surviving by our bare teeth. Dean Henderson was superb. Kieran, did you get a chance to watch the highlights or the game?
I very vaguely followed the game and I watched the highlights afterwards. So, yeah, I've seen all of the goals and the penalties. Dean Henderson had an absolute blinder this game. He really saved Forest here. Willy Bolly picking up a goal against his former club obviously didn't celebrate. And then Raul Jimenez getting the goal. I mean, out of everyone that was going to score against Forest, I think Raul Jimenez, you can't really complain. He is a top-class striker. He's been a bit off it since he had that head injury. But it's good to see him picking up goals, I have to admit, even if it is for like a rival team. If I've seen a player coming back from an injury that bad, it's always nice to see. Yeah, Forest played well, I think. Didn't have too much of the ball. They defended well.
Yeah, they defended very well. I think Bolly was superb. And I think we were very harsh on Willy Bolly around September, just around the Queen's death, I remember. Just it was the second biggest tragedy of Willy Bolly's performance, really. He was just absolutely atrocious. And since then, he's really gone on to be a firm sort of placement in the team, and he's been really consistent, really good. I think he kept us in that game against Wolves, not only scoring the goal, but just his overall determinedness to prove against his old club. He was absolutely magnificent. And speaking of players trying to prove it against their old club, Morgan Gibbs-White. Now, in the interview we're going to do with Ali Glenn, I think he said, and he might have said it off air, Morgan Gibbs-White deserves a chance at England. And I've got to agree with him, man. He's been absolutely superb. He's playing like a traditional Brazilian. I absolutely love watching Morgan Gibbs-White at the moment. Kieran, what were your thoughts when you saw the whole hands in the ears sort of stuff? It was just hilarious, wasn't it?
It was. It started off with Gibbs-White, and then I want to say that Nunez did it? Nunez did it. Then it was Colback, wasn't it?
It was
just a back
the bang bang.
It was just a back and forth between, but it's something that you don't see too much in, like, especially in a game that ended up being as tense as that. But it's just quite refreshing to see, actually, because you don't see, usually rivalries just end up in scraps, which this one obviously did.
Yeah,
but at least they did it at the end of the game. During the game, you could see that it was a really heated rivalry, but there was that kind of respect between the two teams, even if they were giving the fans a little bit. But, I mean, that's a part of the modern game now, isn't it? And you see Aaron Ramsdale doing it against Spurs. He ended up getting kicked.
Nice.
That's just an idiot in the Spurs end, to be honest. I really enjoyed watching that. It was a good back and forth. And I think Gibbs-White definitely had a reason to do it, to be honest. He's been getting abuse off of Wolves fans ever since the move, and he didn't get his chance at Wolves. And now he's showing that they should have given him that chance.
Yeah.
They were looking for a creative midfielder, a number 10, for so long, and they had one, but just weren't playing him. And now he's showing it that he can do it in the biggest league in the world and against his former club as well. And it's great to see. As you said, he is playing like a Brazilian. He's got that flair to his game. And it's something very different to what Forrest had beforehand. Especially in the Championship, you don't really see players with too much flair. It's a very, I want to say it's a much more robust game, a much more physical game in the Championship. There's not really room for players like that in the squad. That's why you saw the likes of Yates and Colback being used so much. Whereas Morgan Gibbs-White in the Premier League and in these cup games is really, really showing why Forest brought him in for what was looked down upon as a lot of money at the time. But now it's starting to, like, hold on a second. This guy could actually end up playing for England at one point.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed watching Gibbsy at the City Ground. He's just so exciting to watch. Every time he gets the ball, whether it's just him doing a turn, whether it's him doing a sort of pass in between his legs, like sort of letting the ball run through, he is just so naturally exciting to watch. And with the Wolves fans, I don't get why they're angry. He's literally gifted them £20 million. And okay, the add-ons going up to 40 million. I think it's something like if we get to the Europa League, that's not happening. We don't need to worry about that. He's going to probably be worth about 20 to 35 million. And we have paid that amount. And I just think he's been an absolute godsend. And he's helping players like Johnson grow as well. I think they both work really well under Cooper. However, Gibbsy's growing further because of Cooper, but he's also allowing Johnson to be himself a bit more. When Johnson was last year, he was the sort of real creative, the only sort of flair player we had. There was a lot of pressure on him, and sometimes in big games, Johnson might be marked out or just couldn't quite perform. Now that we've got Gibbs White, it sort of feels like we've got two, which allows Johnson to be himself and not feel that pressure from the fans. I think that's really important for Johnson.
That's a very good point as well. Ever since Gibbs White's hit this kind of purple patch of form, Johnson has seemed a lot better, because I remember at the start of the year where Gibbs White wasn't in as good form. The team wasn't playing as well. Johnson looks so out of place. We were calling for him to be benched at one point because he just didn't look up to it. He looked uninterested in games, whereas now he looks like he wants to give his all every game, and he's showing that he can play at this level, picking up an occasional goal here and there. But it's the running work that he does that is so important for this Forest team. He may not score as much as perhaps we would like, but he runs so much, puts in those hard yards, and it pays off.
It really does. And no better display than a 2-0 win over Leicester City. Now, we're going to have a little chat about this game, and we'll then go to Ali Glenn, who is our Leicester City fan. You might know him from last year or earlier this year from the 4-0 thumping. But sorry, let's just circle back a little bit before we forget. Wolves going through to the semi-final, playing Manchester United. Dean Henderson not being available to being picked doesn't really matter anymore. We'll talk a bit about that. But how exciting is it to see Forest in their first major semi-final since 1992? It's just so exciting for the club. It's so exciting for the fans. And it's just what we've wanted for so long, to be relevant, to be seen. I'm writing a series of articles for Impact Magazine, which are on Over the Trent Pod's Instagram. And it's basically saying, when I was growing up, we were so irrelevant, and what it's like supporting a team that aren't in the Premier League is pretty rubbish, especially if you're not able to see them every week like I was, because I was born in Bristol. I go through this, and one of the points I make is that the FA Cup run last year was so special because it's everything we hadn't done, and now we're doing this in the League Cup, and now we're really challenging, and now we're playing teams at like their pinnacle and doing really well against them. And I just think Cooper has enabled this club to become an aggressive club, in the sense it wants to go for things, it wants to do well in the Cups. Yes, we lost 4-1 to Blackpool. In fairness, not too disheartened about that. We had a much more important quarterfinal to come against. And I think playing Man United, yes, it's going to be very tough. Rashford's in good form. They're really hitting their straps at the right time, our Manchester United. However, it doesn't matter. The money it will get for the club, the atmosphere it will do to the ground, what it will do to the players, it's really exciting. And we're not going to win. And that's absolutely fine. Two legs against a team who are technically in a title race, in my opinion. It's absolutely okay not to win. But as long as they put the fight in like they did against Wolves, and as long as they put that sort of effort in and that skill they put in against Leicester, I don't mind. I'm really proud for the club, and it's just so exciting. The City 2-0, massive win for Forest, put them to 15th, 5 points clear of the relegation zone, overtaking the local rivals, and once again proving the East Midlands are red. Kieran, you were working, but these highlights and match of the day were superb, weren't they?
They were. I mean, Johnson showing, as I said before, that he can play at this level, and he turns up to big games. I think it's fair to say Leicester just didn't look convincing at all. I'm pretty sure Ali would have put it much better than I did, and I'm pretty sure he could have used much fouler language as well. They didn't look great. It's really weird seeing how this Leicester team have kind of fallen, because few seasons ago, you'd have been talking about them pushing for Europe. And this team hasn't changed too much. But now there's just been this massive drop-off and they're really, really struggling. And I think Brendan Rodgers' time there is definitely limited now. The way that I see it, I think Leicester have waited too long to sack him, to be honest. I think if they were going to do it, they needed to do it at the start of January so they could get a new manager in and they could bring in players that they needed. This has nothing to do with Forest's performance. They were brilliant, honestly. Scarpa had an absolute blinder. I think he actually got the highest rating despite Johnson scoring two, which kind of shows how good he was this game. Johnson obviously being clinical, which is something that was really badly needed. Morgan Gibbs-White, also another player. And Renan Lodi as well had a very good game, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, I want to talk about Lodi. He was so creative, so dynamic. And do you remember when we were worried he wasn't tracking back and he wasn't putting in good balls? That has literally just stopped. I don't know what's happened. I think not making it into the Brazil side, sort of, for me, it seems like it's sort of cleared a cloud over him. He's not trying for anything. He's just playing football again. And he's playing some really nice football. And I really think he's a great addition to the team. And I think with Forest at the moment, everyone's hitting their stride at the right time. You look at players like Gibbs-White, which you just talked about, Brennan Johnson, who we just talked about, but even players like Dean Henderson, who got injured in this game, unfortunately, are just absolutely superb at the moment. Worrell is, okay, he's not perfect. He is a little bit careless at times, but someone like Scott McKenna, who really did struggle in that jump up from the Championship to the Premier League, he's come back into the squad and he's been absolutely superb against Leicester. Aurier, who's been superb. Yates, Freuler, just absolutely dogged performances.
Yeah.
It's so exciting to watch Forest again. And this is the first time since 1997 we've had top flight wins to nil in consecutive weeks, in consecutive games, the first time since 1997, which does suggest things are getting better. And the Premier League currently stands that Nottingham Forest are in 13th. Everton, Southampton and West Ham are all on 15 points. So we're 5 clear of the relegation zone. I'm not saying we're safe because we're not. We're nowhere near being safe. It's getting a little bit less stressful watching.
Yes, it is.
And I mean, the injuries have just hit us like a brick, unfortunately. Henderson, Yates, Willy Bolly, all have come in the past week. And that's really worrying. Taiwo, Lingard. I'm getting a little bit worried we could really struggle against Bournemouth, but Bournemouth are 2-6 to get relegated at the moment. They are very much the bookies' favourite to go down. They're hovering in 17th without a win in four, without any points in four even. The game on Saturday is very worrying. I'm going to say we're going to have the Leicester City chat now with Ali Glenn before we move on to Bournemouth. So we are joined by Ali Glenn, resident URN Leicester City fan. How are you doing, Ali?
Very well. I mean, it's exam season, so it's, you know, under the circumstances. But all things considered, I am doing as good as I can be, I think it's fair to say.
Are your exams going better or worse than Brendan Rodgers' current reign at Leicester City?
I think if it was going any worse, I wouldn't be a uni student for much longer. So I'm going to say better, but not, yeah, maybe not dramatically so.
We've had a sort of even banter. You've been able to lord 4-0 over me for quite some months, and I had the 4-1 over you. And this was the trilogy, and it proved to be as good as all good trilogies. It was the Toy Story 3 of Forest versus Leicester.
I think is the worst one, funnily enough, so kind of fitting.
How did Leicester find themselves going into this fixture on Saturday?
I honestly don't even know where to begin. It feels like a lost cause at this point. Leicester City, after a promising run of form before the World Cup break, came back and are yet to pick up a point in the Premier League. James Maddison has been out, and as the focal point of our team and the best player by quite some distance, it's been very difficult. But we've been picking up losses. We picked up a loss to, who was it to? It was to Fulham, to Newcastle. It's just been pretty tragic all round. It just comes down to nothing is going right at the club at the moment. Absolutely nothing at all. You've got, at the top level, we haven't brought in a good transfer in about 3 transfer windows. We don't seem to have any money. Tactically, it's all gone wrong, and Brendan's complaining about not having the money to bring in the signings, even though his signings have been pretty bad. And I mean, it showed on the pitch. Like, look at the first Brennan Johnson goal. Luke Thomas, Wout Faas, and Dan Amati all ball watching as the pass goes through to from Gibbs-White to Johnson, and he's just left with the, you know, the keys to Nottingham to run into.
And in fairness to them, they are playing an offside trap, and it worked initially, and then VAR comes in and sort of ruins the dream. Leicester had a lot of good opportunities. Harvey Barnes had a few opportunities. Didn't quite take them at 0-0. 2-1 in front of the Trent end, where the goal is actually screaming at him to put it in. And then another one in front of the Leicester City fans. Harvey Barnes, someone you thought you could usually rely on. What's happened to him this year? Has he sort of embodied Leicester's downfall a little bit?
In some ways, he has been poor. He's been a bit of a shadow of his former self. And this is a guy who at some point was getting England shouts, and not unfairly. So I can't remember if he actually made a squad or not, but he was definitely in the conversation about this time last year. And he can't seem to beat a man nowadays. In the game we lost to Liverpool in late December, he was absolutely dominated by Trent Alexander-Arnold, a man who is not exactly famed for his attacking prowess. And those two misses, and they were pretty bad, both on the edge of the 6-yard box, really, where he's been given it on a plate, and both were at 0-0, where we could have gone 2-up. I don't know what's happened to him, and I don't know how you turn it around for a player like that. I worry, because it's a bit of a cliche, is that he's something of a confidence player, and he's just completely devoid of it at the moment. But yeah, when you've got a team around him where nothing's going right, I don't know how you get confidence back into a guy like that.
That's a very good point. And someone I was particularly nervous about was Jamie Vardy coming into this. We know Jamie Vardy's had a tough year this year. However, how Jamie Vardy would it be to get, say, 2 goals against us, smash a corner flag, and then cause a fight in the crowd? He was very quiet. Is Jamie Vardy coming to the end of his Fox career?
Well, he's not really been starting that much. He won't leave the club if he doesn't want to. He will retire at Leicester City if that's what he desires, because who in their right minds would ever get rid of him? Yeah. But he's lost a yard of pace. I don't know what it is. He's just not able to make those penetrative runs, and he's not able... A lot of the time with Jamie Vardy in the seasons, and there were several where he scored 20-plus goals, it would be a case of you'd see a graphic about him, you know, getting the least number of touches in the game of all the players on the pitch. But then he'd pop up and grab one or two completely out of nowhere. And he doesn't have that knack anymore, because he's lost that yard of pace, and the supply lines to him aren't necessarily good enough at the moment. So yes, I think this probably is finally the end of Jamie Vardy. But then by the same token, Patson Daka, who's been brought in to replace him and has been starting, isn't scoring either. So there's no good answer at the moment.
It does feel a little bit, you're damned. The only way to put it, you're damned. There's no sort of way out of it. The transfer deadline day is approaching. Will Leicester City get anyone and sort of give a boost, or do you think you're relying on a new manager boost, which could be coming soon?
I mean, the first problem with that is that the board seem either unwilling or unable to be linked to sack the manager. And if ever there was a time for it, it was about in October, when we've lost about 6 on the bounce, were dead last and didn't look like coming out of it. Now, Brendan Rodgers did turn it around for a period of time, and we were relatively good in the few games leading up to the World Cup, but it's gone to pot again, and I can't see many signs of life. Now, we have actually been linked with a few players, and I am having to very stealthily check my phone to get the names, because they aren't exactly household names.
They're not quite... From Palmeiras, the Brazilian team, which I can't quite pronounce, which Forrest signed today, which I'm very...
Oh, yeah, I saw that guy. I saw somebody ask about it, and I've got to say, I don't really know much about the guy.
Oh, neither do I. But in fairness, if you've known anything about Forrest's recent signings, you'd be very impressive.
That is true.
But you do seem to be stagnating, if not deflating. You said to me that the golden period of Leicester City is over from about 2015 to about the FA Cup win, if we're quite honest, maybe a little bit of the European ride. What is it like now as a Leicester City fan, knowing that your best years are behind you, essentially? And what is realistic? You're becoming Forest. What is it now that you can achieve in the next year or two, and what is success for Leicester City in the next year or two?
It's quite bleak to say, given that, you know, two or three seasons ago we finished fifth twice in a row and should have probably gotten Champions League both of those seasons. But it in the short term, it's avoid relegation. In the post this season, in the next season, the next two seasons, it's consolidating, it's rebuilding, it's either pinning Maddison and Tielemans down to contracts or getting good money for them, which we can fund a rebuild with. It is developing players like Kin and Dewsbury Hall, and it is clearing out some of the deadwood and reforming not only the team, the players, but also reforming the culture, the ideology behind the transfer targets, all of that sort of thing. There was a period of time before Brighton, before Brentford, we were considered the team, the best scouting network, you know, in the country. And you very confidently wouldn't say that with the mammoth wages we put Vestergaard and Ryan Bertrand on. There's no long term, oh, we can be a dark horse for Europe anymore. I can't see that happening. What I can see is best case scenario, us having a little bit of a consolidation and being ready to go again.
I think that's a very mature point. And also, the amount of money you put into your infrastructure, what was it, 80 million into a training facility?
That has happened, and the results have not reflected it, I'm not going to lie.
No, but I mean, in long term, it will be able to reflect, I'm sure. I think you haven't bought lots of players in a way, in a poor sense. You've invested in the club long term, and hopefully that will see you guys sort of stabilise, not go sort of down a sort of Derby County route, and you'll be in League One very soon. Just looking at your next few fixtures in the Premier League, because you also have Walsall in the fourth round of the FA Cup. Well done for beating Gillingham 1-0. Very, very impressive.
Did you see the Telegraph article that was something about how this was a culmination of a Lazarus-like recovery for Leicester City under Brendan Rodgers? Well, it was written without a lick of irony, and well, yeah, I think my tone gives my opinions on it very clearly.
So your next few opponents in the Premier League are Brighton at home. Then you go into February, going away to Aston Villa. Then you have Tottenham. Then you have Manchester United and Arsenal, all before March, where then you start to play Southampton. So that could be a real six-pointer, Chelsea and Brentford. How do those fixtures strike you? Can you get any points from those?
I mean, I don't see it, but you've got to hope. It's not good reading. It really, really isn't good reading. And with the way that Brighton, Villa, you know, the games that you traditionally think, oh, you might have a shot in, those two teams have, especially with Villa since Unai Emery came in, you don't see any way in for us there, especially with the way we've been playing. We just have to hope that when James Maddison returns, which I think is going to be sooner rather than later, he can drag the rest of them to his quality if he's still here. But other than that, we've got the most informed teams, minus Spurs, really. But even then, they're probably a bit much for us. And I can't really see us getting anywhere near to some points until March, as you say. And even then, Southampton are showing signs of life. Who knows where Chelsea will be by then? And Brentford are always a very decent side.
Leicester currently find themselves 15th, 2 points away from the relegation zone. You have played 19 games. Leeds are above you in 14th with the same points and on 18 games with the same goal difference. Are you a little bit worried about how this season could end? A bit of a Blackburn Rovers style, winning the Premier League a few years ago, then going down. Are you seriously worried about going down to the Championship?
I am. Yeah. If you look at this table, any one of you've got how many teams? Seven teams, all within 2 points of the bottom. Forest only 3 points in front of that melee. It could go any way with it. And you've got to look when in those situations, you've got to look at the teams who you think have a bit about them to get out of it. And that isn't Leicester. For me, it could be Southampton. The only club in the league that seems to be in a more dire state than us at the moment is Everton. And I don't think that they're in much of a way of getting out of it. West Ham, you back. Bournemouth, maybe not. But there are clubs there with much better outlooks for the coming few months than we do. And with no signs of any real tangible change coming in, I'm very pessimistic. And I try not to be as a football fan, but it has overcome me in the last few games.
The sort of Forest result, looking down from where I sit, I sit essentially above the penalty spot and I can overlook most of the away end. The sort of tantric mood throughout the game was one of anger that you'd expect at any sort of local rivalry. And then it became anger, not at Forest or Forest fans, but it then sort of directed towards the players and then Brendan, and then the banners came out about the board. The board, the logo said, was that the board's gone missing. Can we see Brendan Rodgers sacked in the next few months?
Well, if the answer is yes to that question, I've yet to see any evidence of it. I can't believe that he wasn't sacked during the run where we didn't score. We didn't, you know, win a game in about eight. And we haven't had that level of bad form here. But it's kind of getting to the now or never point. You either have to book him or sack him. And they're doing neither. I can't see where the board interfere. I mean, I'd happily be surprised because I think it's got to the natural conclusion of Brendan Rodgers' time here. It's not necessarily that he's a bad manager. Everyone knows that he's not. But it's a case of eventually, after a certain period of time, however long that may be, the ideas and the ethos get stale. To a certain extent, you're seeing it with Klopp at Liverpool. And granted, that was a longer period of time. But it happens to the best managers. And I think it's happening at Leicester, but I don't think that anything's going to be done about it, which is one of the most depressing things.
You weren't able to watch the game as you were, well, it was a 3 o'clock kickoff, and obviously TV rights in this country mean you can't watch it, and plus you're playing rugby, I believe. You did get a win for your local team, didn't you?
I was watching the rugby, yeah. Up the Rams. We're a League One side rugby equivalent, so if you want a small rugby team to follow, there's one.
It wasn't all misery for you, Ali. The highlights, you did catch the game, whether that's on Match of the Day or YouTube. What really struck you about the game?
Saw it on Match of the Day. So that was the extended highlights of it, which, I mean, it looked fairly typical Leicester without the key players. The other thing to mention, not only, I think I'm right in saying this, not only did James Maddison not start, Yuri Tielemans didn't start either, I believe. It shows we have this habit. We're very slow in the transition. We allow teams like Nottingham Forest to get to sit these players behind the ball. And when you have a double pivot of Papi Mendy and Wilfred Ndidi, both sort of ball winners, tackling midfielders who aren't really used to having to pick out incisive path, you're not going to expect anything in there. Tielemans did start, but he was in a position that he was unfamiliar with, and there wasn't any creativity, and we look completely vulnerable to the counter-attack, which shouldn't be happening if you've traded off some creativity for two defensive midfielders.
And the counter-attacks where Forest got you twice, as you mentioned, the Brennan Johnson goal, which was originally ruled offside. In fairness, that was very good refereeing from something I rarely say on this podcast. It was very well. It did it all right. they thought it was offside, but they let the goal happen, thought that was very good. And then the craziest goal, where Morgan Gibbs-White essentially does a sort of Pelé-inspired from escape to victory bicycle kick to lead to the attack, and then puts an amazing sort of outside the boot to Brennan Johnson, who just taps it in away to in front of the Trent end. What were your thoughts on Forest from a Leicester perspective?
Everything you needed to be. Basically, you were compact when the time came for it to be. I thought Serge Aurier was really good. I thought both of the centre-halves were really good. Ryan Yates as well, as that, you know, enforcer. And he is doing a much more solid job of it than anybody we have in our central midfield. And when it came to it, the X factor in the game was Morgan Gibbs-White, a player who, unlike Tielemans, was able to pick out those passes, able to cause problems, run between the lines for Nottingham Forest. And Brennan Johnson, who I always thought was going to come of age in the Premier League, it took him a little while, but I think from here he's going to kick on, and he took both of his chances very well. So you were very good, and you had one standout player who made the difference.
I think Morgan Gibbs-White's going to get a lot of love on this podcast, especially after the Wolves game. Have you seen the clip of him doing the fingers in the ears?
Yes.
Even as a Leicester fan, you must love that.
No, I do enjoy that. I'm not a massive fan of Wolves myself, so it got a lot of love from me.
Right, Ali, you do a After Dark show, an indie music show. Would you like to plug it on here?
Oh, yes, I would. Everybody, you want to be, if you are interested in great music and sleep-deprived ramblings, which is very on brand given my current state, you want to be listening in to Living for the Weekend on University Radio Nottingham, Wednesdays from 7 till 9 p.m. Not from 7 till 9 p.m. That is Pinch Vault by the wonderful Lizzie Morris. But after that, you want to be listening 9 till 11 p.m. for Living for the Weekend with, I mean, I do all kinds of stuff, but I only play the bangers.
Only plays bangers. All killer, no filler. There's probably not a lot of the killers coming on your playlist, let's be honest.
Occasionally, yeah. From time to time.
Fair enough. Well, there's something to look forward to, even for Leicester City fans. Ali Glenn, who has just finished an essay at 4 a.m, pulled an all-nighter for an essay today. So it's an absolute miracle he's on the podcast. We promise we won't take the mick anymore. We've had
do not believe that for a minute.
I thought I was very restrained on the day. Ali, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you for coming on Over the Trump. So that was Ali Glenn from Live for the Weekend, 9 to 11 on Wednesdays for all your indie bangers. Looking forward, Kieran, Forest have got quite a difficult run of fixtures due to the fact Henderson's out. Henderson has been so important to us. And you look at the next three league fixtures, which will probably come in, that Henderson time off. Bournemouth, huge six-pointer. Leeds United, huge six-pointer. Fulham, a team I think we could get a draw from like we did last year. Get a win at Craven Cottage. Then Man City. If those games don't go to plan, Forest find themselves back in the relegation battle, don't they?
They do. Another interesting point as well is that we've highlighted all of the players that have grown. Cooper's grown as a manager as well. I think he's kind of adjusted the tactical system a little bit. Forest have become a very good counter-attacking team now. Forest have been playing teams that are better than them, I want to say, on paper. However, it's going to be very interesting seeing how the system changes when they go up against a side that perhaps isn't going to come at them as much as other teams would have. They're not going to be able to just sit back under pressure and then hit on the break as much, especially in this Bournemouth game. I have a feeling that there's a danger there that it could just be a draw if Cooper doesn't change the system a little bit, because at the end of the day, I feel like it's going to be two teams playing a low block, and it's not going to be a very entertaining game unless a system change is made. But it's a very important run of fixtures for Forest. I think the Fulham game can probably be written off in a worst case scenario. The Fulham have been outstanding this season. I don't think they're going to be able to sustain it, but they're obviously up there in that sixth place battle at the moment with Brighton and Brentford, which is weird to say even now. Brighton, Brentford and Fulham battling for sixth place shouldn't be a thing. It's an important run of games, especially that the Bournemouth game, as you said. Hopefully not a repeat of last season down on the South Coast. That was a very dire part of the season. we'll move on from that. And then Leeds have been struggling this season, but Jesse March is a very, very good coach. Mm. I'm still going to say that he is a European level coach. It's just this Leeds team, it isn't his team yet still. He still needs a bit of time. He is a project manager after all. He came through the Red Bull system. So I think that he's going to eventually come good for them, but this is the time to be playing Leeds. They're struggling. I want to say Bamford is not being clinical.
I saw one of his misses, and it's Harvey Barnes-esque bad misses.
I'm looking at when you're on Google and it shows like the percentages. Forest have a higher percentage of winning than Leeds at the moment.
Wow.
It's a 38% chance for Forest to win, 28% for a draw, 34% for Leeds, which is fairly surprising. I would have thought that a draw would have been a higher thing there. I can see it coming away level there, maybe 1-1 or something. But that is probably the most important game of the bunch, I would say. Because then if Forest win that, there's always a chance going into the Fulham game that you could pick up a point or three. But if you go into that into the Fulham game after a loss, there's always a chance that obviously you can slip back into it. That's the thing when you're newly promoted into the league. You need to string games together. Else you are going to find yourself sucked back into the relegation zone.
I think the Bournemouth game, if we win that, which we should be winning, that just creates that little bit further of a gap from another relegation rival in 17th. And then that becomes a 6-point gap, a 7-point gap rather than a 1-point gap. And we desperately need to win that, in my opinion. Then we've got the League Cup semi-final. Those are free hits, really, and just go out and enjoy yourself.
Yeah, the other important thing to highlight as well is West Ham's next game is against Everton. Now, West Ham and Everton, 18th and 19th at the moment, which is a very good time for it to come for Forest, actually, because if it's a draw, they only get a point each, which means that they're not really going to be gaining too much ground on Forest. But if either of them win it, it means that the other one's just getting 0 points there, which a draw would be the most ideal scenario, but a win for either of them wouldn't be the end of the world at the end of the day.
I prefer a draw simply because I think that keeps the managers in for one more week. And just as long as we can delay either Lampard or Moyes getting sacked, the better chance Forest have to stay up. Really exciting times down the City Ground. We'll have a lot more content coming out because Kieran's coming back up to Nottingham with his season card, which is going to be very exciting going to games again. The game you're coming back for is probably the Leeds game, is it?
The league game I'm coming back for will be the Leeds game. It's whether me and you make the trip to Old Trafford or not.
Could be exciting, man. Oh, imagine. It would be unreal. Kieran, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. Speak to you soon, as always. Thank you very much for listening. We do know there's plenty of Nottingham Forest podcasts you could be looking out for. Thank you also to the love we're getting on social media. Ryan Yates liked our story, Kieran. Come on. Yeah. It's getting exciting on social media. I'm a little bit worried about the injuries on the pitch. However, the fans have been absolutely superb, and I think we'll be able to do well in the next few weeks. So come on, you Reds. And keep it URM.